Good evening, I'm Franco and I'm an addict.
Hi, Franco.
Yeah, feels a bit surreal to be on this side, but, you know, I'm okay with that. It's quite humbling, actually, because it makes me just think of my journey. You know, I came to this room, I remember rushing from my treatment center where I was at just about under 2 years ago. And, you know, really excited to be here, to get away from the treatment center for a minute. But also to get the blue book, you know, addict stuff, you know, like they give you a free book, you know, so I came to get that. But yeah, thanks Ian for asking me and, you know, thank you for taking the meeting, Tony, and thank you for you guys being here. You know, whether I thought I wanted it or needed it, you guys are an extended family to me. You are my family to me, you know. It was very important for me. You know, you guys, I just treat it like a family reunion when I come down here. I'm a bit weirded out by people, you know, and I just like, hey, you know, like wave with different people and just go about it. But it feels natural because I keep coming back and it is what it is, you know. So, yeah, I'm really grateful to be here tonight. Experience, strength, and hope. Yeah, I'm originally born in Bermuda. You know, it's paradise to a lot of people. For me, it was like a living hell. I felt like it was a beautiful Alcatraz, 21 square miles, 6,000 to 7,000 people surrounded by ocean and your demons and your family, and it was mad, you know. Bermuda, like our national song, well, one of them is Bermudians like to drink. Any occasion, any persuasion, Bermudians like to drink. You know, like, so like, literally that tells you what I was up against, you know, like it says it all there. Any occasion, any persuasion, Bermudians like to drink, and we drink, and it's rum and it's everything, you know. And growing up, you know, when I think about it, it was for me my first like realization. It was chaos, you know. I was actually born in what we call the ghetto in Bermuda, and both of my parents were at the height of their addiction. You know, I didn't know back then, but now I know. You know, and they didn't know what to do with me. You know, they really at the height of their addiction. And I was like, I called it crackhead daycare, you know, because my mom would have me in the, like, you know, where all the crackhead parents would drop their children to just sort of be together because they're out doing their thing, you know. Anyway, it, you know, for me, it was abuse, physical abuse, psychological abuse right from the beginning. Alcohol, again, like Bacardi Breezer back in the day, you know, like I used to sip from that from my mom and then it'd make me dizzy. You know, I'm like 3-4 years old, and then she realized, you know, putting it in my bottle with juice would knock me out, basically. And I remember that from a very young age, you know what I mean? And it was just Bermuda, like that was just the thing, you know? But growing up, it was always fear. You know, fear was a big thing for me. What was going on in my house, it was a rule. Like my father said, I bought you in this world, I'll take you the F out if you open your mouth, you know? Because I did once at school and I was trying to like reach out and explain what was happening at home and how scared I felt, and that got back to him. And that, for me, started the stage of keeping to myself and wearing masks. But that fear created two things, my two beasts. One on one shoulder is pride. And on the other shoulder was anger. Anger didn't come in too many years later, maybe when I was a teenager, 16, puberty. But pride was like, okay, no matter what was going on at home and the craziness that was going on at home, I found that I can perform in the outside world. And I can be better at you at anything I put my mind to. And that made me feel like I was getting validation because I wasn't getting that at home. So I was really intelligent, I was very sporty, I was well-spoken, all of these things. But it was just an elaborate display to distract you from what was going on at home for me. And that developed over the years. It just got better, really. But what happened in my teenage years, you know, around 16 or whatever, like, and the alcohol, I'd always been experimenting with alcohol in a little pot, you know, like, it's Caribbean. But the anger, the lid off of Pandora's box, if the anger came in when alcohol, I actually could not control it. I could not control, you know, myself. And the drugs kicked in very, very early. And, you know, I was introduced to cocaine at like 16 years old, snorting through lobster tails on a yacht in Bermuda. It was fabulous, you know? And I always knew that I was different, whatever, gay, whatever. I was asleep with anything that showed me affection, you know? So I didn't really care. I was just greedy, you know? But everybody else was calling me gay, and I was like, okay, whatever. So I was like, well, I'll be the biggest faggot that Bermuda's ever seen. And in a lot of ways, I was, you know? Like, I was literally fighting guys for my respect. You know, I can laugh about it and stuff, but it was crazy, you know? And my kind of using life was just really over the top. I should have known from the beginning, actually, all the warning signs were there from the beginning. I could not use anything sensibly. Once I started, I could not stop. I had short man syndrome, so I was really loud, really aggressive, like, you know, and it, all the signs were always there, but I just couldn't stop, you know? And to be honest with you, from the beginning, you know, in those beginning years, I ran away from home for a bit, and my aunt and uncle adopted me, and they gave me a very lovely Christian home to grow up in, showed me how to hold a fork, put meat on my ribs. You know, it was very loving, complete opposite to what my parents were giving me. So that was really nice. But by that time, the seeds were already planted, like, you know, it, as far as I was concerned. And I was already, it was a lot of chaos on the inside of me. And so I knew what it was like to have a decent sort of life as well, like, you know, and decency. And when I started using, you know, I felt like I went straight into another galaxy. Like, it was like rock and roll for me. I love fantasy. I love Al Capone. I loved all the big, you know, like Johnny Depp and Blow. Like, I was just like, oh shit, yeah, this is my life. Like, rock and roll, you know what I mean? And I glamorized it, but it was crazy. I never thought I would be using for the rest of my life. Like, that wasn't realistic. Like, I just loved binging and I loved, like, you know, partying. But at the same time, I couldn't stop. So as much as I didn't think that I'll be using for the rest of my life, I just couldn't press stop, basically. And in my own self-will, I tried different things. You know, I did geographicals. Like, if you look it up in the dictionary, I'm there smiling, you know? Like, literally, I said, okay, leave Bermuda, go to New York. I was homeless in New York, you know, but I thought I was happy, you know, because it just wasn't in Bermuda, and I would escape those drugs and those things. And the drugs, it wasn't the drugs for me. Like, I realize now, actually only being in recovery and coming to these meetings, how damaged I was, you know, and how deluded I was, because my self-will just took me. I juggled my rock bottoms. I thought rock bottoms were quite exciting, you know? Like, I was like, okay, fuck up my life and go somewhere else and put it back together. And these people don't know me, and like, I'm winning, you know? Like, it was just a fact of life. But every time I hit a rock bottom and every time I hit those depths, a part of my soul was being taken out and I couldn't quite put myself back together again. And, you know, my best friend described me perfectly, actually. One day she said, you know, you're the dumbest, most intelligent person I know. And I sat there for a second. I was like, girl, are you coming for me? Like, I didn't really quite understand. But then I really did. You know, I was dumbed down in the end. Like, really sort of, I had fleeting moments of great achievements and stuff like that and whatever, but that was the only stuff that was keeping me going, so to say. Like, if I can show the world that I was still doing good things or getting good jobs or whatever, then I was okay. But in the end, I was just, you know, I was a driftwood at sea, piece of wood just floating, you know, I didn't know. I came to London 10 years ago after a prison sentence in Canada, and I was a bit lost in Bermuda. It was, you know, crack cocaine at that time when I came out, you know, and I said, oh, I'm gonna come to London, I'm gonna go to law school, because I still wanted to go to law school, although I had been to prison twice by this time. So there was a lot of stuff, jails, institution, death. Death was definitely knocking at my door, you know, I had done all the rest. But you know, I came to London and it was crazy, you know. Again, like, I came here and found new drugs. I had been through all the hard drugs, the heroin, the crack, all of this stuff. It didn't matter. Then I came to the gay scene out here and I had all these other type of drugs, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K. I was just doing it, you know? And it was mental. I remember going to the doctor and I was like, because I did. I got accepted to law school and I finished at University of Buckingham and then I transferred to London. And I was go-go dancing and doing all this craziness on the scene, as you do. But in my second year, I realized, because I was partying and I was drugging, you know, and I went to the therapist and I was like, I have depression and anxiety, you know, like, please help me. And he's like, you know, when I explained how much drugs I was doing, he's like, you know, you need to go sort your drug habit out. We can't do anything for you. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, like I've anyway, so that acknowledged. That took a long process for a while. I had to go to like day centers or whatever to try and sort my drug stuff out. And in the end, that was a long, gruesome process. You know, I tried to go to my sister's in Scotland for a month to try and get sober. I did, I was sober. But I came back to London and I just ripped it up even more. You know, I ended up in hospital for 4 weeks after a binge. Anyway, I researched rehab because I was like, okay, it's going to be prison again, Franco. I was kind of institutionalized. I like being in a prison, being fed. I knew what time things were, you know. So I was kind of thinking that prison was the next option. But I had a little glimmer and I was like, well, maybe rehab. But anyway, the process was a bit long. You know, I went into rehab with a girl's clean urine. You know, I was even trying to manipulate the process there, you know, like, and it was the most difficult but rewarding process. Is a 12-step program. So right from the beginning, I was involved with the steps and stuff. And it has been and continues to be the most amazing experience of my life. Like, I didn't know really what I was coming in for. Like, you know, I just thought I was going to put down the party drugs. And when the guy's like, no, you're an addict, there's no more weed, there's no more alcohol, I just stared at him in the rehab like, I didn't sign up for this shit. You know, like, I really didn't. But I sat back and I thought to myself, I was like, Franco, it's not rocket science. You know what I mean? You're the guy out in your onesie, 4 o'clock in the rain, screaming at the weed dealer, you know, and the alcohol, the super tenants filled with urine around your room. Like, you are a mess, no matter what you put in you, you know? So I had a reality check, you know, and it's been beautiful. Like, I came out of treatment and I've remained consistent. These rooms have been my biggest support. I think treatment was definitely a part of God's plan for me. You know, with this recovery process and with you guys, you know, the step work has been absolutely amazing. I got a sponsor really quickly. He's been clean for 33 years. That's as long as I've been born, so that's quite attractive. And he puts me in my place, but it's done with love, you know. And I just put as much as effort into this program as I did into getting drugs, really. So that's just the equal for me. You know, and it is consistently sort of, it just stripped me down and it's slowly putting me back together. I've come a long way, but I have a long way to go, you know, and I accept that. The acceptance part of being an addict was really wonderful for me. I cried my eyes out in rehab upon that realization, you know, and I think that that's been the foundation of my recovery. Everything else is just sort of like followed suit. I've listened, really. You know, I'm really grateful. I just read out my step 8 to my sponsor, which was really, you know, it was nice. Again, like, I'm just kind of like just doing whatever I've suggested and going with the flow. I try not to think too much about it or try to, I don't think I have to have all the answers. You know what I mean? I'm weirded out constantly. But feel very uncomfortable a lot. But the discomfort of being in here, it doesn't even compare to the discomfort of being in active addiction. You know, this discomfort that I feel is for growth now, you know, and I appreciate that. I used to run away from pain, you know, and now I face it. I face all of my stuff and I work through it. But yeah, again, I'm really grateful to be here, you know, and it has been pretty surreal from just sitting over there week in, week out to be here. But I'm really grateful to be of service and keep coming back. Thank you.